Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, Shabbos Daf Chaf, with two lines from the top, says the Gemara. V'chama, the Gemara here is referring back to the Halacha in the Mishnah, that if one was to go ahead and roast meat on Erev Shabbos, very close to the onset of Shabbos, he must ensure that the meat is roasted before Shabbos, because otherwise he might be enticed to approach the oven to stoke the flames, stir the coals, to hasten the roasting process. So the Mishnah says it needs to be roasted before Shabbos. V'chama, and how far roasted does it need to be? Does it need to be fully roasted? Is that necessary? Says Gemara, no. It doesn't need to be fully roasted. Amar b'leza, amar rav, k'day sheyitzoylu m'vaydoyim. It's okay, it's enough that it gets roasted on Erev Shabbos, k'machal b'ndersoy, to the point of machal, the food of b'ndersoy. He was a bandit, a robber, who would eat his food when it was already one-third cooked. So evidently, it's already edible at that point, and it constitutes, mevushal, is considered to be cooked already, or roasted, and this is sufficient to diminish this concern that the person will, out of desperation, go ahead and stoke the flames, stir the coals. So once he's gotten to the point of machal ben rsoi, he's roasted his meat, up to the point of a third, at this point it's already considered edible, and it is sufficient to remove the chshash of shami yechata. Itmar nami, we learned a similar halacha, applying this concept of a third cooked. Itmar nami, omar v'asi, omar v'yechnon, koshu k'machal ben rsoi. Once the food has been cooked up to this point of machal ben rsoi, it is considered to be edible and mevushal, and therefore ein boi mishum bishuli nachrim. The halacha of bishuli nachrim, that if a guy cooks food, it is also to be eaten. The Chacham made a gzera for concern that it might lead to social interaction. And therefore, if the food has been already cooked up to the point of a third, it is sufficiently cooked, it has a din of a vushal, it is edible, and even if the non-Jew completes the cooking process, no harm is done. Tanya says, Gemara, another halacha applying this principle. Chanan yoimer, kol shku machal ben drusoy, once the food has reached this stage of machal ben drusoy, it is has been cooked to a third. Mutalash oisal gavikira. One may leave it on top of a kira. This was a circular stove, and he may leave it on top of the kira throughout Shabbos. Va'afal bishen grufa k'tuma. Although the kira was not garuf or katam, this is a requirement. Garuf is the shoveling of the coals. K'tuma is covering over the coals with ashes. So this is a requirement generally, if one would like to leave his pot on top of the stove throughout Shabbos, for concern that a person might approach the coals to stir them, and therefore one needs to shovel them or to cover them with ashes. However, if the food is already cooked up to the point of machal ben drusoy, it is already a third cooked, it's already rendered edible, in that case a person may leave it on top of the kira. There's no concern of shami yechate b'gechalim. Continues the Gemara. What about baking bread on Erev Shabbos, close to the onset of Shabbos? Ein noisin es hapas, the Mishnah told us, unless there's enough time available for a crust to form on the bread. Iboilu, Reb Leza adds, he says, k'dei sheyikra ma'tachtin shelo, the bottom side of the dough, of the bread, needs to form a crust. What does it mean, tachtin? Iboilu. Now, they used to paste the dough into this cove-shaped oven. So he used to paste it on the ceiling of the oven, and it was facing downward towards the flame down on the floor. So when Reb Elazar says to the Tanna Kamma that it's not sufficient for the crust to form, it needs to be the tachtin, the bottom side of the dough needs to form a crust. What does it mean by bottom? Iboilo, tachtin, haich degabe tanner? What does it mean, the bottom one, the bottom side, meaning the side of the dough that is pasted against the ceiling of the oven, that is tachtein. Oidilma tachtein, when he says tachtein, it means haich degabi or, it means the exposed portion of the dough which is facing downward towards the flame. So what does Reb Elazar mean when he says tachtein, that the crust is to form on the tachtoin of the dough. Does it mean the bottom side, the side of the dough that is pasted up against the ceiling of the oven? Or does it mean the exposed portion of the dough, the surface that is facing downwards towards the flame? And that takes, it's much quicker. It's much harder. It takes much longer for the underside of the dough, which is away from the fire, to form a crust. It says the Gemara Toshma, Reb Lezer Omer. We have a Brayis where Reb Lezer says clearly, "Kadei sheyikin upaneo, hamadubakim betaner." When Reb Lezer says that a crust needs to form on the bottom side of the dough, what he means to say is the paneo, the side of the dough, which is medubakim betaner, which is pasted against the oven. So Tosfos explains that Reb Lezer has come to you machmen on Tanakama. He tells the Tanakama, it's not sufficient for the dough to form a crust anywhere, whether on the exposed side or on the underside. We need the tachtein. It needs to be on the underside of the dough, on the side of the dough which is pasted against the ceiling of the oven, which takes a bit longer to form than the crust on the other side. Continues the Gemara. Mishalshon sapesach. So the Mishnah told us there are some exceptions to this concern, to this gzera of Shem Yechata, for instance, regarding the Karban Pesach. They indeed are allowed to lower the spit with the Karban Pesach into the oven on Erev Shabbos, very close to nightfall, very close to Shabbos. There's no concern of Shem Yechata. My time says, why? Mishum de bnei chabura zrizenhen. Because the group, the chabura, which were involved in bringing the Karban Pesach, since they were involved in bringing a carbon, they were conscientious. They were mindful of what they were doing, and they will take care of each other and watch over one another so they don't come to do a malacha. Says the Gemara, halav hachi. But if not for this factor, that the Bnei Chabura has reason, halav hachi loy, it would be prohibited. Va'amar mar, but haven't we learned? Gadya, when it's concerning the tender meat of a tender goat, in that case, there's no concern of Shem Yechata, because he won't open the oven door, since the inrush of cold air, the draft, will damage the tender meat. We learned Gadya, tender meat of a kid, Ben Sharek, whether or not the door to the oven is sealed shut, Ben Sharek, whether it's sealed, Ben Lesharek, whether it's not sealed, Shaper Dami. It is mutter for one to place this meat into the oven very close to Shabbos, because he will not come to open the door, lest he damage the meat. Therefore, why, regarding a Karban Pesach, do you need another reason to be matah? Because Bnei Chabura is reason him. Regardless of that factor, the Karban Pesach was tender meat. It was brought with a goat or a sheep which were less than 1 year old. It was tender meat, delicate meat. In this case, there's no concern that one will open the door to the oven and stir the coals. Says the Gemara, there's a difference. Hasam, that halacha, is mintach, is only speaking about when the meat is cut into pieces. In that case, the Gemara tells us, the inrush of cold air will ruin it, will harm it. There's no chashash of Shem Yechata. He won't open the door to the oven. Hacha, however, regarding Karban Pesach, we know it's loy mintach. It's not cut into pieces. We know the Karban Pesach was roasted in whole form. As the pasuk says, Reisha akrav al kirvay. In our case, there's no concern that the draft will harm the meat. If so, there is a very real chashash of Shem Yechata. It would be also, if not for the fact that Bnei Chabura, as Rizimheim, the conscientious, and they'll watch one another not to come to do malacha. Continues the Gemara. What else did the Mishnah state as an exception for the Isser? That there is no Isser of Shem Yechata, there is no concern regarding the bonfire that they used to kindle in the Beis HaMoiked, Umachizin Asur, Bemaduras Beis HaMoiked. They would kindle the bonfire in the Beis HaMoiked, which was in the Beis HaMikdash, for the sake of the Kehanim, to warm them up. And one may even begin kindling it very close to Shabbos. There's no concern that somebody will go ahead and approach the coals and stir them to improve the performance of the flame. Says, well, what is the reason for this heter? Menon Amili, how do we know this heter? Amar Avuna, it's actually a pasuk. It says, "Lo yisivaru eish, don't kindle a fire, bechol meshvaseichem, in all your dwellings, be Yamah Shabbos." What does the pasuk mean with the term bechol meshvaseichem? Pasuk is teaching us something that only bechol meshvaseichem, in all your private dwellings, yatamaver, may you not kindle a fire. Aval bad atomaver, you may light a fire in Madura's Beis HaMikdash. In the Madura, the bonfire in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, certainly it's mutter for them to kindle this fire on Erev Shabbos, close to Shabbos, because even if they're going to actually stir the coals on Shabbos, it would be mutter. The pasuk tells us it's mutter. Maskel or chizda. Ihachi, if so, that the pasuk teaches us a heter, that one is allowed to kindle the Madura Beis HaMikdash, even on Shabbos. Ihachi, afilu b'Shabbos nami. So even to kindle it anew on Shabbos itself, it's mutter. So why does the Mishnah need to tell us a halacha? That the Kohanim may kindle the bonfire on Erev Shabbos, although it's very close to the onset of Shabbos. We're not concerned that they'll do any malach on Shabbos. Even on Shabbos itself, they may kindle the fire. So it's unrelated with this concept of the Gzeir Shemim Chata. It's a blanket heter. They may light a fire on Shabbos itself. Ela Rav Chizda, cannot be so. The pasuk is not referring to this type of case. Ela Rav Chizda Kra Ki Asa. What is the pasuk coming to teach us? The pasuk which says that only in all your dwellings you may not light a fire, but otherwise you may. The pasuk is referring to a specific case. To Karbanis Ki Asa Lemishri. The pasuk is coming to be matir a case of a varim upedarim hudasa, a case of burning the varim, the parts of the karbanis upedarim, the fats, which were left over from the weekday karbanis, which were left over from the Friday karban. The pasuk teaches us one may complete the burning of the varim upedarim even on Shabbos. That's only because we're speaking about the actual offering of the karbanis, but certainly the bonfire which the kohanim made for their own convenience, for private use, which is unrelated to karbanis, made it in the Beis HaMikdash to warm them up. Rashi explains, since they used to walk barefoot on the floor of the Azara, this was a requirement. Since the floor of the Azara is Kodesh, and they need to be directly connected to it without any chatzitzes, so they needed the fire to warm them up. This was a private matter. This wasn't actually a karban. Therefore, certainly, one may not kindle the bonfire for the Beduris Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos itself. The pasuk is speaking about karbanis, the Evarim Beduris, the remnants of the karbanis. So what then is the heter cited in our Mishnah regarding the Beduris Beis HaMikdash? It's only regarding Erev Shabbos. One may begin the kindling this bonfire on Erev Shabbos, even though it's very close to the onset of Shabbos. Nevertheless, we're not concerned that perhaps one of the Kehanim will go ahead and meddle with the fire on Shabbos. Why? The Kohanim is reason him, because the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash were involved in bringing the Karbanis. They indeed were Bnei Torah, they were conscientious and mindful of what they were doing. And there's no concern that one of them might come to do Malacha on Shabbos. Now Tosis points out that when the Pasuk tells us, when the Gemara tells us that one may complete the burning of the Ivarim or Pedarim even on Shabbos, says Tosis, how can it be so? We know that one may not burn the Ivarim Pdarim of the weekday Karbanis, of a Karban that was already offered on Friday. One may not take the Ivarim and the Pdarim and burn it on Shabbos. So what is the Gemara speaking about? Says Tosis, the Gemara speaking about when they were already ignited by the fire. It was Mashla Ba'en Ha'ur, that the fire has already caught on to them. They're already partially burnt. So once they've gotten to that stage, that advanced stage of Akrova, says Tosis, so even if they're part of the weekday Karbanis, the Karbanis shall chayil. Nevertheless, since they've come to that advanced stage of Akrova, it was Mashal Ben Aor. Therefore, the Pasuk is teaching us that one may complete their Akrova even on Shabbos itself. So, in summation, the Mishnah tells us that there are certain cases which the Gzer of Shemichata will not apply. The Mishnah begins by telling us that if one roasts meat, if the meat is roasted already by Joyim on Erev Shabbos, he may continue this process. It may remain in the oven and continue its roasting on Shabbos. The Gemara explains it doesn't need to be fully roasted. As long as it's shlish, it's roasted or cooked a third, it's considered to be mevushal, it's considered to be tzoli, it is somewhat edible, and therefore there's no concern that he'll go out of desperation to hasten the cooking and roasting process. The Gemara said that this halacha, this principle of being cooked a third, it's called machal ben dersoi. This was the manner in which this bandit would eat his food. And this applies to three things. Number one, to Shabbos, as we mentioned here. Number two, to bishul akum. If it's already a third cooked, considered to be properly cooked and edible somewhat. And there's dirm of vushal, even if the guy will complete the bishul, it does not do any harm. Also regarding Shabbos, that when we place this type of food on top of a kira, even though the coals are present, they are not shoveled or covered by ash, which is generally a requirement for one if he wants to leave something on top of the kira over Shabbos, in this case that it's already somewhat edible, there's no chashash of shemir chata. What about bread? So there's a machlekes, the Tanakhama says that as long as any surface of the dough has formed a crust, it's considered to be sufficient to remove the chashash of shemir chata. Rav Lezer says it needs to be the panel tachtein, the bottom side of the dough which is attached to the oven, that needs to form a crust, and that's later. So he's being machmer over the Tanakhama. The Gemara told us regarding two exceptions to this Isser. Number one, the Korban Pesach. That may be done even very close to Shabbos, since the Bnei Chabura's reason, they'll pay attention, they'll watch each other, they don't come to do Malacha. The Kohanim as well, in the Beis HaMikdash, even though it's a private bonfire, it's not part of the Akrava. It's Mutar, because Kohanim's reason him. They're conscientious and mindful, and they won't come to do Malacha on Shabbos. Continues the Gemara. Ubegvulin, however, a bonfire which is lit outside the Beis HaMikdash, it requires Kedisha Techoiz Ha'ur Berubay, that the fire should catch on to most of it. At that point, it's considered to be sufficiently developed and will certainly proceed on its own without any interference. There's no chashash. Somebody will go ahead and stoke the flames, stir the coals to develop the fire further. Says the Gemara, okay, what does it mean? Shetechoiz Ha'ur? That the fire needs to catch on berubay, on the majority, on most of it. What does it mean, the most of what? We're speaking about a bunch of pieces of wood. My Ruben, what does it mean, most of it? Amarav, roiv kalechav lechad. If you have a bunch of pieces of wood, we require that the fire catches on to most of each single piece of wood. Now, we're not speaking about the interior, the thickness of the wood, we're not speaking about the circumference of the wood. It is sufficient that most of the length has caught fire. Because since they're lying together as a group, one will kindle the other, the fire will catch from one to the next, and it is considered to be sufficiently developed to mitigate the concern that somebody will go ahead and stoke the flames. Ushmul Amar, it's not required. We don't require that much development. It is enough, Kadesha lo yomru, that the fire has gotten to the stage and point that one will not say any longer, Havei etzim v'nech tateim, come bring some small pieces of wood to place underneath the large logs to kindle them. So once it has gotten to that point, that one doesn't need to aid and assist the fire, doesn't need to bring little splinters to help in the kindling of the fire, apparently the fire is sufficiently developed to the point that we are sure that it will continue developing on its own and will not require anybody to go and meddle with it and tinker with it on Shabbos. So Shmuel is being makel, is more lenient than Rav. We don't need a roiv. It's enough that it got to the point that one lays back and doesn't go ahead and add little pieces of splinters to help in the kindling. Tani Rav Chiel is Yud Shmuel. Rav Chiya has a brisa in support of this concept stated by Shmuel. This brisa is regarding the avoda of halogas hamenorah in the Beis HaMikdash, and the brisa tells us that the kohen needs to kindle the menorah up to the point kedei shetehei shalheves, that the flame needs to be developed enough that the flame will be oile meile, will rise on its own without any additional assistance, and that is considered to be properly lit. But it's not sufficient that he merely kindles it a bit, that the flame still needs some help, some assistance to rise up. So apparently, what constitutes the status of being lit? It is when once the flame has gotten to the point that it rises on its own without any help, without any assistance. Here too, regarding the bonfire, what is considered to be a properly developed fire, once it's gotten to the point that it doesn't need to be assisted by bringing some splinters of wood and helping in the kindling. So this is in accordance with the Shita of Shmuel. So we discussed a fire which is based on a group of a bunch of pieces of wood. Rav says we need most of each piece. Shmuel says as long as it doesn't need any more assistance. What about a bonfire in which you take one single stump of wood and you light it? This is a little bit more complicated because you don't have the bunch of wood which is the only piece of wood which help each other and aid and assist in the kindling. We have one single stump of wood. If so, we have one machmer in this case. Says the Gemara, Eitz Yechidi, if there's a single stump of wood, what is considered to be the point of Shetechoiz Ha'ur Berubay? The fire has caught on to most of it. Says the Gemara, we have another machlekes, Rav Amar, Rav Avyai. The fire needs to reach most of its interior, most of its thickness. At that point, the fire has developed to the point that we are sure that it will be successful on its own and won't require any more tinkering. V'amila, some say, there's a girsa, Ushmol Amar, V'roiv HaKeifoi. That roiv here is not the thickness, but rather the circumference. When the fire surrounds most of the block of wood, that is sufficient. And that at that point, one may leave it over Shabbos. There's no concern of Shem Yechat. So Rav says most of the thickness, and Shmuel says most of the circumference. Amar Papa, if we have two opinions, let's combine it. Hilkach, therefore, be'inan roiv avyoi, or be'inan roiv akefoi. Rav Papa says, let's be machmer, let's combine both opinions. Both are required. Most of the thickness, as well as most of the circumference. The Gilyan Shas points out that this was Rav Papa's practice several times in Shas. We find that he would combine two shitas. We had this in Brachas Nafnon Tes. We combined two different opinions into one and required both of them to be fulfilled. Says Marke Tanoi, indeed this dispute of Rav Avya, Rav Kefoy, is actually also connected to the Machlekes Tanoim that we find. Rav Chiya Amar, Kleshishoches Eitz, Melechus Oman. We require that the wood become damaged and destroyed and unfit. Melechus Oman to be used by the craftsman. Rashi explains, this is Rav Avya, when it got to the point that most of its thickness was already burnt. So now it's unfit for craft. Hervidu Nasei Roimer, we're speaking about Roiv Hekeifei, Kadesh Techeis, Ha'esh, Mishnei Staden, when the fire catches on both sides. So we don't need Roiv Hekeifei, but rather Roiv Avyai, rather we need Roiv Hekeifei. V'av B'shein Rai L'dava, even though we don't have a proof to this concept, Zeich L'dava, we have an indication to this, that once the fire has surrounded most of the wood, is considered to be a fully developed fire. The pasuk says that shnei tzoisa b'chla esh, the two sides the fire has caught on, v'toicha nicher, and the inside became fully dried out. Ha'itzach melacha, will indeed this log be suitable for craft? So apparently, the pasuk is indicating that once the fire has surrounded the piece of wood, then its entire inside has become dried out, and surely the fire will carry on and carry through and continue burning successfully. Ask Taisvis. The pasuk here says that when the fire caught on to both sides of the log, it's unfit. It's unfit for malacha. Now the Gemara before told us that this description of the eitz becoming unfit for craft is specifically regarding a piece of wood where the fire has permeated its interior, has burnt through most of its thickness. As Umar said before, Reb Chiya says that the eitz becomes unfit for craft when the fire permeates most of its interior. And here the pasuk describes the fire merely surrounding the exterior of the wood, and that results in becoming unfit for craft. How do these two things work? Says Taisus, generally speaking, in order for it to be unfit for craft, indeed, the interior needs to get burnt. This pasuk is speaking about Eitz HaGefen, the wood of a vine tree, which is more susceptible and apparently more delicate. So even when it's merely Roiv HaKeifei, the fire merely surrounds it, that already results in the piece of wood becoming unfit for its use for craft. So in summation, the Mishnah taught us that one may light a bonfire on Erev Shabbos, very close to Shabbos, as long as the fire took hold of most of the material. It caught on to Rubai, Shatecha Za'u Berubai. Now what does it mean, Ha'ur Berubai? The majority of what? So it depends what type of bonfire we're speaking about. If we're speaking about a pile of wood, then we have a machlekes in Rav and Shmuel. Rav says, it requires Rav Shekol Echad Ve'echad, most of the length of each individual piece of wood. Shmuel says that's not necessary, as long as the fire has proceeded sufficiently, that one doesn't call out to bring forth some splinters to help in the kindling of the fire. So at that point, it has developed sufficiently to the point that we're confident that the fire will develop and proceed unhindered without any need for interference. The Gemara compares this to the mitzvah of menorah. It's considered to be in the state of a lit. Once the shalevis, once the flame rises up on its own without any additional help or assistance. Now if the fire is burning in eitz yechidi, a single log, a single stump of wood, in that case, Rav says, we need roiv avyoi, that the fire has reached the majority, most of its thickness. It permeated into roiv of its thickness. Shmuel says, roiv ekeifoi, most of its circumference. Rav Papa says, we're going to combine both shitas and be stringent. We require both roiv avyoi as well as roiv ekeifoi. Continues the Gemara with a somewhat related machlekes regarding a pasuk. The pasuk says, "Va'ach lefanav mevayores." So the ach was in front of it and burning. Rashi says this is describing Yoyakim HaMelech, who was burning the Megillah, the scroll sent him by Yirmiyah, which foretold the upcoming Churban. So he was burning it. He wanted to disregard the message. Now, what is the definition of the word ach? Eva machlekes. My ach. Amar Rav Achvana. These are branches of a willow tree. Ushmol Amar. Ach is the same as brother. Eitim shenidku b'achvana, a pile of wood that burn in brotherhood. It's a pile of wood of various sizes, and each one kindles the other. They burn together in brotherhood. Says the Gemara, who d'amalu? Somebody was announcing, my boy achvana, who wants to buy achvana? And what did they find? Ishtakach arvasa, he was holding onto willow branches. Apparently, achvana refers to willows. Okay, continues the Gemara. The Mishnah taught us that a Madura can only be lit on Erev Shabbos if the fire is Eiches Berubai, catches on to most of it. Says the Gemara, there are some exceptions to this rule. Some fuel, some materials are highly combustible, highly flammable. And in those cases, we're not concerned about Shem Yechata, because once you ignite them, we are certain that the fire will develop properly and complete on its own. It won't need any additional tinkering, any additional interference. Therefore, even if he merely lights it, just a little bit of it, on Erev Shabbos, that is enough, and is mutter to do so, even very close to Shabbos. So what are these materials, says the Gemara, Amar Afun? Konim, reeds, they are highly combustible, and ein tzrichim roiv, they don't need a roiv. So if they're loose reeds, a roiv is not required. However, ogdon, if they're bundled together, in this case, the fire has difficulty traveling between them. Tzrichim roiv, we require a roiv, that the fire catches on to most of it before Shabbos. A similar halacha regarding garinim, date pits, ain't tzrichim roiv. Roiv is not required if they're loose, but nosam b'chasolas, if they heap together in the baskets made of these branches. So since they're bunched together, the fire has some difficulty traveling between them, and indeed tzrichim roiv, we require a roiv that the fire catches on to most of it while it's still Erev Shabbos. So once again, Rav Huna says loose items are more susceptible to the fire than items that are heaped together. Maskler Chizr Chidah challenges this assertion. Adrav, just the opposite. Ifcha Mestava, logic indicates otherwise. Konim Mevadron, if they're loose, they might get dispersed and the fire will not catch one from the other. Ogdon, however, if they're bundled together, Loim Mevadron, they don't get dispersed. And in that case, there's more of a chance of the fire spreading properly. The same thing regarding the pits, garinim. If they're loose pits with vajran, there's a concern that they get dispersed and the fire won't catch properly. Nosam b'chayisolais. But if they're heaped together in these baskets, loim vajran, they don't get dispersed and the fire will proceed more successfully. It's Renami says, Zumara Rav Kana. Rav Kana will take the middle route. With regarding the reeds, he's going to follow the opinion of Rav Huna. that loose reeds are better than ones that are bundled together. Regarding pits, he's going to assume the opinion of Chizah. That's the inside. Arav Kan, Konim She'agdan, if the reeds are bundled together, indeed, fire will have some difficulty traveling between them. Tzrich and Rav, a Rav is required. Lo Yagdam, if they're really loose, ain't Tzrich and Rav, a Rav is not required. Gariinim, regarding the pits, it's just the opposite. If they're loose, Tzrich and Rav, Nosim Echaisolis, in this case, they're heaped together, and they're more susceptible to the fire. Ain't Tzrich and Rav, a Rav is not required, in accordance with the Shita of Rav Chizah. Torah Rav Yosef, there are more materials that are considered to be highly flammable, and merely igniting them is considered to be sufficient to ensure success, eventual success of the bonfire. Torah Rav Yosef, Arba Maduris, four types of fires, Yitzchich and Rav, don't require a Rav. Shal Zephes, of pitch, shal Gophers, of sulfur, shal Gvin, of cheese, shal Ravav, of fats, Masisa Tana, the Maisa, we add another, couple, Av Shal Kash, straw of shal Gvava, the remnants of the stalks in the field, and the splinters of wood that are gathered from the field. So these are highly combustible, flammable items. There's no concern of Shem Yichat, as long as he lit a little bit, we're sure the fire will proceed successfully. Arav Yechana, Eitzim Shal Bavel, Eitzim from Bavel, Babylonian wood, they too are highly combustible, Ein Tzrich and Rav. Maskar of Yosef, what are you referring to when you say Eitzim Shal Bavel? Mai, what exactly is this? Ilay Mesilti was speaking about these small chips of wood, they used to do that in Bavel, they used to chop the wood into small chips, and that doesn't need Rav, that is highly combustible. Hashta, if we find psila regarding a oil-soaked wick, Amar Ula, Ula said, Hamadik, one who lights the Neiras Shabbos, Tzarech She'yadlik v'Rav Hayotzei, he must stay there and light most of the wick which is protruding from the oil. So there's a requirement to burn it, to light it, up to the point that most of the wick is lit. Only by doing so has he fulfilled his mitzvah of Neir Shabbos. So an oil-soaked wick, which is certainly more flammable than wood chips, if that requires one to stand there and light most of it, silti mi boy, certainly chips of wood require roiv to be considered to be in the status of lit, of properly lit. So you can't say that silti chips of wood don't require roiv. Elam Rav Yosef, what are we speaking about? Shucha de Arza, this woolly substance that is found in the branches of the cedar tree. So this indeed is very flammable, and Rav is not required. Rami Bar Abba Omar, it's referring to Zaza, this type of moss, which indeed is also highly flammable, and therefore in these cases, once he even lit a little bit of it, it is sufficient for the success of the eventual fire, and there's no concern about Shema Yichat. So in summary, we learned about a list of items which do not have the stipulation of Rav. By merely igniting it somewhat on Erev Shabbos, it is very mutter to maintain this fire in Shabbos, because we're certain that the fire will catch on properly and will proceed successfully without any tinkering or interference. What are these items? So we began with Kanim and Garinim, reeds and pits, date pits. However, Achleikis, in what configuration is a mutter? Rav Huna says, the Kanim and Garinim that are loose, that are not bundled together, they are susceptible to the fire and don't require Rav. Rav Chizza says, only if they're bundled together. Rav Kahana says, Kanim that are loose are indeed susceptible to the fire. Garinim, they need to be heaped together in order for the requirement of Rav to be cancelled on them. So, according to Rav Huna, Kanim and Garinim require to be loose. According to Rav Chizda, require to be bundled. According to Rav Kahana, the Kanim require to be loose, and Garinim are required to be bundled. The Gemara proceeded with many other examples of items that are highly flammable and combustible. For instance, Zephes, the pitch, Gophers, sulfur, Gvina, cheese, Revav, fats, Kashan Gvava, straw, and the stubble of the field, Shukha the Arza, the woolly material found inside the cedar branch, and finally Zaza, this type of moss. Hadra Allah Yitzias HaShabbos. Continues the Mishnah, Vameh Madlikin, Ubameh Madlikin. What types of materials can be used as fuel and wicks for Neiros Shabbos, and what types of materials are possible disqualified for Neiros Shabbos. Now we know the Chacham gave us a mitzvah. Havad Lakas Neiros Shabbos, one is meant to light a candle, a lamp, before Shabbos. There are various reasons for this mitzvah. Oynik Shabbos, Kavod Shabbos, Shalom Bayis. Oynik Shabbos means so that the Shabbos meal should take place in front of a light. This enhances the mealtime experience. One enjoys his food more when he can see what he's eating. Having a lit lamp is also a Kavod Shabbos, a mark of honor for the sake of Shabbos. It also enhances the peace and harmony in the home, since one won't trip over unforeseen objects lying on the floor. So the mission goes and teaches us that the Neir Shabbos needs to be lit in a manner where the flame is a steady, healthy flame, and there's no concern that it will falter and it will require some aid and assistance. The person will go ahead and adjust it on Shabbos, and that's a malacha. Therefore, one must use proper materials, wicks, to have the ability to absorb fuel properly, have the ability to maintain a steady, healthy flame. One must use fuels that have the ability to absorb properly inside the wicks and produce a steady flame. Says the Mishnah, what types of wicks, what type of materials can we use for wick in the Neir Shabbos? What materials are disqualified from being used as psilis, as wicks, for the Neir Shabbos? Says the Mishnah, we may not use loy belechash, this woolly substance found in the cedar branches mentioned earlier in the Gemara, for loy bechosen, a wick made of unprocessed flax, a wick made from this low grade silk, the cocoon of the worm. One cannot make a wick from the psila seidan. This was the woolly material found inside the willows. Veloib psila samidbar, or to use this tall grass found in the desert, which was braided into wicks. Or this green substance which is found on the surface of the water. So up until this point, we discussed limitations regarding wicks. These things don't have the ability to produce a steady, healthy flame. The Mishnah will proceed listing for us disqualified fuels because they don't have the ability to be absorbed properly in the wick and to produce a healthy flame. What are these wicks, these fuels? V'loi b'zefes. Can use pitch, lebishava, wax, lebishama, kick. According to one pshat in the Gemara, it's the oil from a specific type of bird. Lebishama, shreifa. This is true when that became tamei, it needs to be burnt. Lebalya. Can I use fat from the tail of a sheep? Lebichelef. Nor can we use fat tissue from an animal. Nochama meyotiyomer, madlikim bechelef mevushal. We can use chelef, which was cooked, which is in a liquefied form. Regardless, it is possible. Echad mevushal, whether it's cooked, echad she'enu mevushal or uncooked, ein madlikim boy. Continues the Gemara will describe for us to define a definition of the various items mentioned in the Mishnah. We began with lechesh. What is lechesh? Shuchad arza, a branch of a cedar tree. Says the Gemara, shuchad arza. It's ba'almo, it's a piece of wood. It's not suitable to make a wick from it. So perhaps you can use it for a torch, but not for a wick. So why does the Mishnah need to mention this? Says the Gemara, it's Balmu, it's merely a piece of wood. But Amarnisa the Ispe, we're speaking about the Amarnisa, the woolly substance found inside, behind the bark. And that indeed can be formed into a wick. Nevertheless, it's unsuitable for Neir Shabbos. V'lei b'choysen. What is choysen? Am Rav Yosef, Neir Shal Pishtan. These broken fibers of flax which are found inside the flax plant. And this is the chosen referred to in the Mishnah. Amli Abaye, you can't propose that Neiros and chosen are the same item, because the pasuk seems to differentiate between the two. V'ksiv, doesn't it say Vaya chosen l'Neiros? The strong one will be weak like Neiros. So Abaye interprets the word chosen like chosen, and he infers from this pasuk Michlal, apparently the chosen la Neiros, so they're two separate items. So you can't say that they are one and the same. El Rabbaye, what then is chosen, which is described in our Mishnah? It is kisna flax, the dayik which was crushed. So they used to soak it and crush it, and then they used to separate the fibers one from the other. So this flax only underwent a partial processing. It was the daik was crushed, but it wasn't yet separated, the fibers weren't really separated, and therefore, since it isn't fully processed, it has some difficulty absorbing the fuel properly, and it can't be used for a wick for Ner Shabbos. What is that? Amar Shmuel Shaltinu, I asked the Chodesh Chusiyam, all the seafarers, what exactly is this? Va'amelin, they told me, Kol Chushmei, it's this mossy substance which grows on top of stones at sea. Rav Yitzchak Aziri Amar, Gushkura, it's the psyllus, it's the low-grade silk, the cocoons of the worms, which are formed into psyllus, and they're not capable of maintaining a steady, healthy flame. Says the Gemara story, Ravin v'Abaye, Havayos v'Kamed, who was sitting in front of Rabbana Nachemya, who was the brother, Achbad Reish Kalusa, the brother of the head of the Golos. Chazi, they noticed, Davalovish Metak, so he was wearing this unique garment, made of silk. Amalei Ravin v'Abaye, Hainu Kolach Tisnan, we have a live demonstration of the Kolach material discussed in our Mishnah. This Beged consists of Kolach. Amalei, so Abaye told him, no, it's unrelated. This is not Kolach. Anan, we, Shira, Paran, Makrinale. This material that he's wearing, we call it with the name Shira Paran, which is high grade silk. This is not the Kolach mentioned in our Mishnah, which is low grade silk. They're unrelated. Says Gemara Meisvei, we have a brisa which seems to contradict Ravin's assertion that ordinary silk is considered to be kolach. The brisa says, Hashiroim silk, v'akolach, v'asirikin, chayav metzitzis. The brisa gives us three types of silk. They're all chayav metzitzis. Rashi explains that the brisa here is coming to rule out from the shita that holds that only begot are made of wool and linen, semer pishtam, chayav metzitzis. No, the Braisa tells us all types of materials obligated in tzitzis. In any case, the Braisa lists three different types of silk. Shiraim, which is ordinary silk, Va'kolach, which seems to be a different types of silk. So apparently, the beged that this fellow was wearing, which was ordinary silk, or even high-grade silk, can't be considered to be kolach. The Braisa seems to put them in two different categories. There's Shiraim and there's kolach. So this is a kasha to Ravin, who says that Shiraim and Kolach are one and the same. Tuyufta de Ravin Tuyufta. So indeed, this is a refutation to Ravin's Pshat. Shiraim is considered to be ordinary silk, and Kolach must be low-grade silk, and that is what's mentioned in our Mishnah. Iboyisem, or we have another teretz. Shira l'chud v'shira f'radin l'chud. That Ravin will maintain that Kolach mentioned now, Mishnah is actually high-grade silk. The Shira Paradna that this person was wearing, this garment of Ravana Nechemya, consisted of a high-grade silk called Shira Paradna. According to Ravin, this indeed is the Kolach mentioned now, Mishnah. Getting back to the Brais says Shiraim Va'Kolach, which seems to separate between Shiraim and Kolach, Pashat. Simple. Because the Brais is speaking about ordinary silk. Shiraim means standard silk. Va'kolach is this high-grade silk, this Shira Paradna, which is the material that this person was wearing, which indeed is the kolach of our Mishnah. So there's no kash from the Braisa. When the Braisa separates between Shiraim and Kolach, it's very, very much understood why. Because Shiraim and Kolach are two separate things. Shiraim is ordinary silk, and Kolach is high-grade silk. So in summary, the Mishnah tells us that Kolach is disqualified from being used as a wick for Ner Shabbos. What is Kolach? So we have several pshatim. According to Shmuel, it's this mossy substance which grows on the stone at sea. According to Rav Yitzchak Ben Zeira, it's the psoilus of the mesh. It's the low grade silk made of the cocoon of the worm. And according to Ravin, in the final pshat in the Gemara in the Boisema, Kolach is actually the high grade silk, the Shir Paradna, and that is disqualified from being used for Ner Shabbos. Continues the Gemara, Velayu Psila Seidon. What is that? Achmina, the woolly substance found in the willows. Says the Gemara story, Ravin Vabai, have a Ka'azlu, they were traveling with Paxa in this valley, Tamrisa, the Tamrisa Valley. Chazinu Lahana Arbasa. So they noticed those willows. Amalei Ravin Abaye. So just as in the earlier story, Ravin exclaimed to Abai, look, take a look. We have a live demonstration of the Halacha and Al-Mishnah, Hainu Idan Disnan, this exactly is the Idan described in our Mishnah. Amar Leis, Abai responded, Hayetz Ba'almuhu. You're looking at a wood, at a tree. That can't be used for a wick. Kala v'achvilei, Raven peeled away the bark and he showed it v'achvilei amarnisa, the woolly substance, the beni beni that's found in between, and that indeed is the idan described in our Mishnah, the woolly substance found inside the willow tree. V'loy v'psil samidbar, what is that? That is shavra, some sort of tall grass which grows in the desert, which can be braided into a wick. The green substance found on top of the water. Mayi, what is that? Ilei mo'uchmasa, the charitzi, this green algae that grows on top of the water of the ditches. Ifruchi mafruchan, that substance merely crumbles into crumbs. That certainly can't be used for a wick. Elor papa, we're speaking about uchmasa de arba, the green substance which grows, the moss which gathers underneath the hull of a moored ship. Tana, we have a brisa which added to the Mishnah. Hayisifa alein, they added another two substances which are disqualified from being used as wicks. Shal tzemer, wicks made of wool, but shal seir, made of hair. Says, if so, why didn't our Mishnah mention these items? If a Tana did them, our Tana didn't find any need to discuss wool or hair. Why? Because these things are inherently incapable of being used as a wick. Tzemer, michvetz chavetz. Tzemer, wool, curls up and is not suitable. Cannot function as a wick, regardless. Seir, hair, ichruchim michruch. It gets incinerated by the fire immediately. So these things are inherently incapable of carrying a flame. They're unsuitable, inherently, to be used as a wick, and therefore there's no need to discuss these in the Mishnah. Continues the Gemara. Regarding fuels that are disqualified, Vlebi Zephes. What is Zephes? Zifsa, pitch, Shavas, Kirusa, wax. Tana, says the Gemara, we know it in the Braisa, Adkan. Up until the Zephes and the Shava, the items mentioned up until now, that was regarding Psul Psilis, disqualified wicks, Mekam Eloch. From here on in, going forward, Psul Shemana. The list consists of disqualified fuels. It says, Pshita. It's self-evident that Zephes and Shava are fuels. Why do you need to stipulate and explain to me that the category of disqualified fuels begin from here? It's Pashat. Says more Shavetz Tichle. The Brisa needs to inform us regarding wax and tell us that it is only disqualified to be used as a fuel. Maldetame, perhaps I would think. Lipsilas Namilechazim. That can be used as a wick. For instance, Rashi says they used to form the wax into candles. So even though it's not being used as a fuel, it's being used as a wick form, I would think perhaps it's not suitable in that scenario as well. Mild time, perhaps I would think. Not only can it be used as a wick if you drop a piece of wax into the candle, is it unsuitable? But even the psilis nami lechaz, even if it would be used as a wick in a candle form, kamash malon, that's what the Bryson needs to teach us. No. That from here on in, going forward, Zephes and Shava are merely speaking about disqualified fuels. But if it was to form the Shava into a wick, like a candle, certainly it is mutter. Continues the Gemara, Omar Rabbi Bar Abin, Itrina, what is the substance called Itrina? Itron is Psulta de Zifsa, the remnants of pitch. It's a byproduct of the processing of the pitch. Shava, what is Shava? Psulta Dufsha, the remnants of the honey. So what remains of the honeycomb once they extract the honey? Says Umar Lemainaf Kemina. Is there any halachic ramification to this discussion of the Itra being Psulas of Zephes, of the Shava being the Psulas of the Dvash? Says Umar, yes, there is a halachic manifestation to this discussion. Lemekach Lememker, for buying and selling. So if a person commits to selling his friend some Itran, you need only give him this byproduct of pitch. He doesn't need to process it any further. Same thing regarding wax. If he tells him he's going to sell him shava, he need only give him this crushed honeycomb. He doesn't need to process it any further. That is considered to be shava. Let's take perhaps a quick review of today's daf, beginning from the beginning. We discussed the gzera shem yichata, and we know that there's no gzera in the following situations. It is mutter to begin a cooking process, provided that there was some cooking that took place already in Bayit Yoim. The Gemara told us what is the degree of cooking, what is the degree of roasting required. It needs to be at least a shlish, gotten to a stage of a third of its ordinary cooking, ordinary roasting. That is considered to be mavushal or tzali. It's considered to be somewhat arable. It is machal ben dersoy, like the bandit ben dersoy used to cook his food. And therefore, it is sufficient to mitigate the chashash of shami yichate. One will not be inclined to go ahead and meddle and interfere with the cooking process since it's already reached an edible stage. The Gemara told us this principle applies to three things. Shabbos, bishul akum. If a guy completes the cooking process after it has already been cooked a third, he doesn't do any harm. When we place a food which is cooked a third on top of a kira, he need not worry about the coals, even though he didn't scoop away the coals or cover them. That's okay, because once it's reached a third of its cooking, it's considered to be somewhat edible, and there's no chashash of shami yichata. Regarding bread, we require that it formed a crust. Sheikh Rupanel. Rav Elazar says it needs to be the bottom side, the underside of the dough, and the Gemara concludes it means the side that is attached to the oven. The Gemara told us that regarding our Karban Pesach, there's never a chashash that to do malacha because Bnei Chabur has a reason him. Kohanim Beis HaMikdash as well, there is a reason him. Therefore, there's never a chashash of Shami Yechata. The Mishnah told us that regarding a bonfire, we require Shatecha Za'ur Berubai. The fire has caught on to most of it. What does it mean, most of it? So if we're speaking about a pile of wood, according to Rav, we need Rav Shekel Echad Ve'echad. Most of each piece of wood, according to Shmuel, the fire needs to have gotten to the stage of development that one doesn't call out and look for more spindles of wood to go ahead and aid in the kindling of the fire. The Gemara compared it to the Halach of Menorah. Once the flame rises up on its own, unassisted, is considered to be sufficiently developed and has the status of being lit. Regarding an Etz Yechidi, a single stump, a log of wood, Rav says we require Rav Avyei. The fire has permeated most of its interior, most of its thickness. According to Shmuel, Rav Kefai, most of its circumference. Rav Papa's Machmer. We require both Rav Avyei and Rav Kefai. The more proceeded and told us there's some things that are combustible, highly flammable, and don't need a Rav, even if he merely ignites it somewhat. We are confident that the fire will proceed and catch on properly. What are these materials? The Gemara began with kanim and garinim, reeds and pits, according to Rav Huna. If they are loose, then rav is not required, according to Rav Chizder. If they're bundled together, in that case, rav is not required, according to Rav Kahana. It depends. Kanim, when they're loose. Garinim, the pits of dates, when they're heaped together, in that case, they don't require rav. Once he kindles them somewhat, we are sure, confident that the fire will catch on properly and develop on its own without any need for interference. The Gemara concluded with other materials as well that are highly combustible. Zephes, pitch, gopher, sulfur, cheese, revav, is the fats, kash, straw, gvava, the remnants of the stalks in the field with the different splinters of wood which are gathered from the field. Shucha de arza, the woolly material found inside the cedar branch. And finally, zaza, this moss material. Since these things are highly flammable, there's no chashash of shamei chata. Once you kindle them somewhat, the fire will catch on and develop properly. The Gemara proceeded with the next parak that the mitzvah near Shabbos is to light the lamp before Shabbos, provided that the materials allow and maintain a properly burning flame, a steady flame, which will mitigate the chashash of Shema. Perhaps he will go ahead and adjust and brighten the flame, so you must use proper materials for wicks as well as fuels. You may not use materials that can't properly hold the flame, regardless whether we're speaking about the wicks that can't properly absorb the fuels and can't maintain a steady flame, or various fuel materials that aren't successfully absorbed inside the wicks and don't maintain a healthy, steady flame. The Gemara concluded that regarding shava, wax, it is only a psul with regard to fuel, but if you were to form the wax into a wick, for instance, in a candle form, that certainly is permitted. That maintains a clear, healthy, and steady flame.